Chapter 19. Richmond and tea and brandy and water at O's Cottage Hotel. The reader, high or low, knows that when Mrs. Reader desires a thing, have it she will. You may just as well talk of avoiding her as of avoiding gout, bills, or gray hairs, and that, you know, is impossible. I, for my part, have had all three, and a wife too. I say that when a woman is resolved on a thing, happen it will. If husbands refuse, fate will interfere, flectere si nequio, etc. Semicolon. But quotations are odious, and some hidden power was working in the case of Mrs. Hayes, and, for its own awful purposes, lending her its aid. Who has not felt how he works the dreadful conquering spirit of ill? Who cannot see, in the circle of his own society, the fated and foredoomed to woe and evil? Some call the doctrine of destiny a dark creed, but, for me, I would fain try, and think it a consolatory one. It is better, with all one's sins upon one's head, to deem oneself in the hands of fate, than to think with our fierce passions and weak repentances, with our resolves so loud, so vain, so ludicrously, despicably weak and frail, with our dim, wavering, wretched conceits about virtue, and our irresistible propensity to wrong, that we are the workers of our future sorrow or happiness. If we depend on our strength, what is it against mighty circumstance? If we look to ourselves, what hope have we? Look back at the whole of your life, and see how fate has mastered you and it. Think of your disappointments and your successes. Has your striving influenced one or the other? A fit of indigestion puts itself between you and honors and reputation. An apple plops on your nose and makes you a world's wonder and glory. A fit of poverty makes a rascal of you, who were, and are still, an honest man. Clubs, trumps, or six lucky mains at dice make an honest man for life of you, whoever were, will be, and are a rascal. Who sends the illness? Who causes the apple to fall? Who deprives you of your worldly goods, or who shuffles the cards, and brings trumps, honor, virtue, and prosperity back again? You call it chance, and so it is chance, that when the floor gives way, and the rope stretches tight, the poor wretch before St. Sepulchre's clock dies. Only with us, clear-sighted mortals as we are, we can't see the rope by which we hang, and know not when or how the drop may fall. But revenans a nos moutons. Let us return to that sweet lamb Master Thomas, and the milk-white ewe Mrs. Cat. 7 years had passed away, and she began to think that she should very much like to see her child once more. It was written that she should. And you shall hear how, soon after, without any great exertions of hers, back he came to her. In the month of July, in the year 1715, there came down a road about 10 miles from the city of Worcester, two gentlemen, not mounted, Templar-like, upon one horse, but having a horse between them a sorry bay, with a sorry saddle, and a large pack behind it, on which each by turn took a ride. Of the two, one was a man of excessive stature, with red hair, a very prominent nose, and a faded military dress, while the other, an old weather-beaten, sober-looking personage, wore the costume of a civilian, both man and dress appearing to have reached the autumnal, or seedy state. However, the pair seemed, in spite of their apparent poverty, to be passably merry. The old gentleman rode the horse, and had, in the course of their journey, ridden him 2 miles at least in every three. The tall one walked with immense strides by his side, and seemed, indeed, as if he could have quickly outstripped the four-footed animal, had he chosen to exert his speed, or had not affection for his comrade retained him at his stirrup. A short time previously the horse had cast a shoe, and this the tall man on foot had gathered up, and was holding in his hand. It having been voted that the first blacksmith to whose shop they should come should be called upon to fit it again upon the bay horse. "Do you remember this country, Major?" said the tall man, who was looking about him very much pleased, and sucking a flower. "Think them green cornfields is prettier looking at than the D-tobacky out yonther, and bad luck to it. I recollect the place right well, and some queer pranks we played here 7 years ago, responded the gentleman addressed as Major. You remember that man and his wife, whom we took in pawn at the Three Oaks? And the landlady only hung last Michaelmas? Said the tall man, parenthetically. Hang the landlady. We've got all we ever would out of her, you know. But about the man and woman. You went after the chap's mother, and, like a jackass, as you are, let him loose. Well, the woman was that Catherine, that you've often heard me talk about. I like the wench, her, for I almost brought her up, and she was for a year or two along with that scoundrel Gelgenstein, who has been the cause of my ruin. The infernal blackguard and ruffian, said the tall man, who, with his companion, has no doubt been recognized by the reader. Well, this Catherine had a child by Gelgenstein, and somewhere here hard by the woman lived to whom we carried the brat to nurse. She was the wife of a blacksmith, one Billings. It won't be out of the way to get our horse shot at his house, if he is alive still, and we may learn something about the little beast. I should be glad to see the mother well enough. Do I remember her? Said the ensign. Oh, I remember Whiskey. Sure I do, and the sniveling sneak her husband, and the stout old lady her mother-in-law, and the dirty one-eyed ruffian who sold me the parson's hat, that had so nearly brought me into trouble. Oh, but it was a rare rise we got out of them chaps, and the old landlady that's hanged to. And here both Ensign McShane and Major Brock, Erwood, grinned, and showed much satisfaction. It will be necessary to explain the reason of it. We gave the British public to understand that the landlady of the Three Oaks, at Worcester, was a notorious fence, or banker of thieves, that is, a purchaser of their merchandise. In her hands Mr. Brock and his companion had left property to the amount of 60 or 70 pounds, which was secreted in a cunning recess in a chamber of the Three Oaks known only to the landlady and the gentleman who banked with her, and in this place, Mr. Cyclop, the one-eyed man who had joined in the Hayes adventure, his comrade, and one or two of the topping pricks of the county, were free. Mr. Cyclop had been shot dead in a night attack near Bath. The landlady had been suddenly hanged, as an accomplice in another case of robbery, and when, on their return from Virginia, our two heroes, whose hopes of livelihood depended upon it, had bent their steps towards Worcester, they were not a little frightened to hear of the cruel fate of the hostess, and many of the amiable frequenters of the Three Oaks. All the goodly company were separated. The house was no longer an inn. Was the money gone too? At least it was worth while to look which messes. Brock and McShane determined to do. The house being now a private one, Mr. Brock, with a genius that was above his station, visited its owner with a huge portfolio under his arm, and, in the character of a painter, requested permission to take a particular sketch from a particular window. The ensign followed with the artist's materials, consisting simply of a screwdriver and a crowbar, and it is hardly necessary to say that, when admission was granted to them, they opened the well-known door, and to their inexpressible satisfaction discovered, not their own peculiar savings exactly, for these had been appropriated instantly, on hearing of their transportation, but stores of money and goods to the amount of near £300. To which Mr. McShane said they had as just and honorable a right as anybody else. And so they had as just a right as anybody except the original owners. But who was to discover them? With this booty they set out on their journey anywhere, for they knew not whither, and it so chanced that when their horse's shoe came off, they were within a few furlongs of the cottage of Mr. Billings, the blacksmith. As they came near, they were saluted by tremendous roars issuing from the smithy. A small boy was held across the bellows, two or three children of smaller and larger growth were holding him down, and many others of the village were gazing in at the window, while a man, half naked, was lashing the little boy with a whip, and occasioning the cries heard by the travelers. As the horse drew up, the operator looked at the newcomers for a moment, and then proceeded incontinently with his work, belaboring the child more fiercely than ever. When he had done, he turned round to the newcomers and asked how he could serve them. Whereupon Mr. Wood, for such was the name he adopted, and by such we shall call him to the end, wittily remarked that, however he might wish to serve them, he seemed mightily inclined to serve that young gentleman first. "It's no joking matter," said the blacksmith. "If I don't serve him so now, he'll be worse off in his old age. He'll come to the gallows, as sure as his name is Bill, never mind what his name is." And so saying, he gave the urchin another cut, which elicited, of course, another scream. "Oh, his name is Bill?" said Captain Wood. "His name's not Bill," said the blacksmith, sulkily. "He's no name, and no heart, neither. My wife took the brat in, 7 years ago, from a beggarly French chap to nurse, and she kept him, for she was a good soul." Here his eyes began to wink, and she's gone now. Here he began fairly to blubber. "Indeed, him, out of love for her, I kept him too, and the scoundrel is a liar and a thief. This blessed day, merely to vex me, and my boys here, he spoke ill of her, he did, and I'll cut his life out, I will." And with each word honest Mulciber applied a whack on the body of little Tom Billings, who, by shrill shrieks, and oaths in treble, acknowledged the receipt of the blows. "Come, come," said Mr. Wood, "set the boy down, and the bellows a-going. My horse wants shoeing, and the poor lad has had strapping enough." The blacksmith obeyed, and cast poor Master Thomas loose. As he staggered away, and looked back at his tormentor, his countenance assumed an expression which made Mr. Wood say, grasping hold of McShane's arm, "It's the boy, it's the boy." When his mother gave Galgenstein the laudanum, as he had the self-same look with her. "Had she really now?" said Mr. McShane. "N.D. Pre, Major, who was his mother?" "Mrs. Cat, you fool," answered Wood. "Then, upon my sacred word of honor, as he has a mighty fine kitten anyhow, my dear." "Aha! They don't drown such kittens," said Mr. Wood, archly, and McShane, taking the illusion, clapped his finger to his nose in token of perfect approbation of his commander's sentiment. While the blacksmith was shoeing the horse, Mr. Wood asked him many questions concerning the lad whom he had just been chastising, and succeeded, beyond a doubt, in establishing his identity with the child whom Catherine Hall had brought into the world 7 years since. Billings told him of all the virtues of his wife, and the manifold crimes of the lad. How he stole, and fought, and lied, and swore, and though the youngest under his roof, exercised the most baneful influence over all the rest of his family. He was determined at last, he said, to put him to the parish, for he did not dare to keep him. "He's a fine whelp, and would fetch 10 pieces in Virginie," sighed the ensign. "Crimp, of Bristol, would give 5 for him," said Mr. Wood, ruminating. "Why not take him?" said the ensign. "Faith, why not?" said Mr. Wood. "His keep, meanwhile, will not be 6 pence a day." Then turning round to the blacksmith, "Mr. Billings," said he, "you will be surprised, perhaps, to hear that I know everything regarding that poor lad's history. His mother was an unfortunate lady of high family, now no more, his father a German nobleman, Count de Galgenstein by name." "The very man," said Billings. "Young, fair-haired man, who came here with a child, and a dragoon sergeant. Count de Galgenstein by name, who, on the point of death, recommended the infant to me." "And did he pay you 7 years' boarding?" said Mr. Billings, who was quite alive at the very idea. "Alas, sir, not a jot. He died, sir, £600 in my debt, didn't he, ensign?" "600, upon my sacred honor. I remember when he got into the house along with the pole I saw. What matters it?" Here broke out Mr. Wood, looking fiercely at the ensign. £600 he owes me. How was he to pay you?" But he told me to take charge of this boy. If I found him, and found him I have, and will take charge of him, if he will hand him over. Send our Tom, cried Billings. And when that youth appeared, scowling, and yet trembling, and prepared, as it seemed, for another castigation, his father, to his surprise, asked him if he was willing to go along with those gentlemen, or whether he would be a good lad and stay with him. Mr. Tom replied immediately, I won't be a good lad, and I'd rather go to than stay with you. Will you leave your brothers and sisters? Said Billings, looking very dismal. Hang my brothers and sisters, I hate 'em, and, besides, I haven't got any. But you had a good mother, hadn't you, Tom? Tom paused for a moment. Mother's gone, said he, and you flog me, and I'll go with these men. Well, then, go thy ways, said Billings, starting up in a passion. Go thy ways for a graceless reprobate, and if this gentleman will take you, he may do so. After some further parley, the conversation ended, and the next morning Mr. Wood's party consisted of three. A little boy being mounted upon the bay horse, in addition to the ensigner himself, and the whole company went journeying towards Bristol. Asterisk, 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 we have said that Mrs. Hayes had, on a sudden, taken a fit of maternal affection, and was bent upon being restored to her child, and that benign destiny which watched over the life of this lucky lady instantly set about gratifying her wish, and, without cost to herself of coach hire or saddle horse, sent the young gentleman very quickly to her arms. The village in which the Hayeses dwelt was but a very few miles out of the road from Bristol, whither, on the benevolent mission above, hinted at, our party of worthies were bound. And coming, towards the afternoon, in sight of the house of that very Justice Ballins who had been so nearly the ruin of Ensign McShane, that officer narrated, for the 100th time, and with much glee, the circumstances which had then befallen him, and the manner in which Mrs. Hayes the elder had come forward to his rescue. Suppose we go and see the old girl, suggested Mr. Wood. Oh, harm can come to us now. And his comrade always assenting, they wound their way towards the village, and reached it as the evening came. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.